This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to Sam and T's Summer Sit-Downs. This is our special summer series where we chat to a Nijin footy player and get to know their story through family and footy. Plus, they get to program a few songs. My name is Sam Wykes and with me each week is my Cook Island koi, Tinira Arona T.
Kia ora, Sam. It's been a fun couple of months doing this special show, chatting to Nijin stars like Joe Ngalavau, Will Hopoate, Sio Kapesipalu, Salatonga Tuki, and more. You can catch up with them too if you missed it via the Nijin Footy podcast or the ABC Pacific website. And this week, Sammy, we have a good friend of ours, Keith Peters. He was born in Port Moresby, Papua New Guinea. He also played in the NRL for the mighty Penrith Panthers, making his NRL debut in 2006, and he represented the PNG Kumuls 8 times and the Prime Minister's 13 PNG team 5 times, and I also got to run a few lines off him when we got to represent the mighty Newtown Jets together. Welcome to Nijin Footy Summer Sit-Downs, Keith Peters.
Hey, T, that was a good intro, man. I don't know where you got all those stats from, but pleasure to be here, man. Good to chat again after all these years, and Wyxie's been a while as well. Old Paddy's boys.
Paddy's so, boys, that's right, yeah. Mate. The nursery out there in Blacktown, so it's good to have you on, right. Bro.
Thanks for having us.
I want to rewind the clock right back to your upbringing and speak a little bit about your culture. So where's your family from and what was your upbringing like?
So my one's a little bit different. So my dad's from Samoa, my mum's from Papua New Guinea. So in the islands, if you study, generally the islands are quite small, so they set up sort of faculties in different areas. So one of my uncles studied agriculture, he had to go to the Philippines. If you study law, you go to Fiji, engineering in New Zealand. And my dad's studied medicine to be a doctor. And back in those days, you have to go to Papua New Guinea or Port Moresby to study that. There's a few Samoans that went around that time as well. So he met my mum. My brother and I were born in Port Moresby. My mum's from a village in Port Moresby called Hunalbutta, translated to the big village where it sort of extends out onto the water. So started my childhood there, man. We set up home in like a medical faculty. So when my dad was a student there, he was playing rugby, local rugby in PNG. So probably looking at sort of 15 a side at the start. And then as we got a little bit older, PNG was getting a little bit different, like sort of dangerous a little bit as well in the early 90s. So we went to Melbourne first. My mum gave birth in 91 to my sister. Did all right. We went back to Papua New Guinea and then we ended up eventually migrating to Australia in 1993. Just my mum initially with she was pregnant actually. So she came over with 3 kids and pregnant with a 4th. And yeah, man, we set up roots initially in Melbourne and then when we were in Sydney, and sort of, I like to say I probably started my life in Port Moresby, but then grew up in Western Sydney for the most part.
How old were you when you left Port Moresby?
So I was 7. I did like, you know, preschool, kindy. I actually missed all of kindy. I got malaria when I was younger. So it sort of put me out for about 6 months. And so I went straight from like a prep and then straight into grade 1. There's a school out there called Corribasia, not too far from the hospital. And yeah, did grade 1 out there and then came out to Australia for grade 2.
Holy malaria. So like, would that be your, I guess, the bulk of your memory growing up there? Or did you have any other sort of fond memories of that little time you had over in PNG?
Bro, I got heaps of memories. So I went back a couple of times when I was older. My grandfather was there, or we call him like our bubu. So I'd go back and visit him. My dad was also studying back there. But my initial memories, man, was running around. So my dad played for Barbarians, like 15 a side. And as a kid, you probably, you know that there's a little bit of danger around, but it sort of becomes, it's normal to you, you know, like you just, if we go from here to Broker or something, then you go around the long way, don't go the direct way. But otherwise, life was good, man. You play with the kids until the sun goes down with a bit of touch footy. I think, so 91, Panthers were going all right. So like without even ever being a Penrith, I sort of was thinking of Chip and Chase, like a Greg Alexander. And then, you know, so we sort of watched it. It's big. Rugby league's really big in Papua New Guinea. And then my brother decided to go for, like, Queensland. I supported New South Wales. you know, you pick a team and for club and also state, even though probably none of us have ever been to Australia before, you pick one and then you hold on to it for quite some time. But great memories, rich in culture, rich in, it's a very tribal sort of country. Like T's been there a couple of times, and but it's a great nursery, like a lot of talent, and it's only now where they're sort of starting to get these same opportunities that a lot of the Polynesians get, probably via New Zealand, to be honest, like the Samoans and the Tongans and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, we will touch on a bit about your thoughts on, you know, Papua New Guinea being the next NRL team and what you think about the future of rugby league and PNG. But your father being from Samoa, do you know whereabouts in Samoa he's from?
Yeah, so similar thing. My dad took me over as a student. So our family are in Apia. Our family village we call home is Vailoa. So it's only a couple of kilometres outside of Apia. My dad and all that sort of sit in Alafua, but my grandmother's from Savai, which is the other island, and my grandfather's from Apolu. But for the most part, man, we, like a lot of our family originally from Samoa, we call Vailoa home.
You know, when you talk about the blend of cultures, PNG and Samoan, how did you, you know, float between the both? Where did you fit most with? Is it mum's side or dad's side? I know you were born there, but you know, what was your connection like to both sides?
Yeah, it was interesting. Like I sort of, when you're young, you sort of bounce around a little bit and you think about it with good memories. But sometimes I'll go to Samoa for 3, 4, 5 months with my old man and then come back to Papua New Guinea. But sort of being in PNG, we call it like sort of mixed race sort of kids, right? So when you're younger, you're sort of searching for a little bit of identity. When I was in Papua New Guinea, sort of being a mixed race there, they sort of associate you, sort of look at you as that Samoan kid. But then obviously when I go to Samoa, they sort of look at you like, you know, it looks different. He's that PNG kid. So you don't really sort of find your place. As I got older, I tend to appreciate it. But I think initially I always look back home being sort of Port Moresby for me, where I was born. That was, you know, where I grew up. My grandfather was there. Even when we came over to Australia initially, my dad was still there. He was in Port Moresby, but then he worked out in Kundiawa, Mount Hagen, you know, different places in the Highlands, serving as a doctor. So I used to go back and holds a special place for me. Papua New Guinea, very influential in sort of where I was born and what I relate to. Yeah, so that's always been there, but I've got very close tied to Samoa as well. You know, my grandma was there. She only passed away 18 months ago, but as I said, our family's a little bit different where I don't think some Samoans sort of migrate over to New Zealand and spend, you know, a generation or two there and then come over to Australia. Our family pretty much was in Samoa for the most part, unless they went over somewhere to study and then go back. So it's a bit of a tough question. Like it's torn in between both, but they both hold special places in my heart for sure.
You mentioned Mount Hagen. The first thing I said was, is it Mount Hagen Eagles? This was
was this one of our Asian knowledge
yeah,
questions?
Hagen.
I think it is. Yeah. So
just another challenge. Throw it out there. But your dad, you know, studying medicine and, you know, being a doctor, was your upbringing in PNG, you know, did you come from a more wealthy family then? Did you grow up in a more of a wealthy background, or is it just like all the other kids and around your community?
Yeah, we definitely weren't wealthy. Like my dad, if anyone knows, like when you study medicine, it's a long haul. Like you're essentially a student for 7 or 8 years. So I think we were making do on a student wage. My mum, I think she finished high school in grade 10 and then she started working grade 11, 12 onwards. So for the most part, I think our family initially were living in student accommodation, living off my mum's wages. So we definitely weren't wealthy and we were sort of surviving my mum's wages. But when you look around in PNG, there's so much disparity between the haves and the have-nots. Like the poverty is just across the road. You can sort of see that. And so I definitely wouldn't say we're poor, because if you go to PNG, there's particularly when I was growing up, we went to, I think my mum did her best to take us to, you know, kindies and we went to a good school, like an international school in grade one. Which was, you know, really important for our family. But directly around us, like I used to play touch footy with kids that have probably 2 pairs of shorts, 3 pairs of T-shirts, and literally that's it. Sometimes not even shoes, right? So, like, I definitely look down and, you know, I've got shoes on my feet, I've got clothes on my body, I've got a roof over my head, and I'm playing touch footy with some squatters or some kids and that. So it's a big, I think about it now a little bit, you know, like when I'm older and I've got kids and that, and sort of provide a little bit of perspective. You know, we come here for opportunity, which has been fantastic, but there's some things that you see when you're growing up and it gives you a sense of, I suppose, gratitude, right? Like in terms of what we have opportunities because I'm sure there were a heap more talented kids there that didn't have enough money for school, let alone footy boots or, you know, to join a local footy team to run around with their mates. So, yeah, man, it was a great experience, but we definitely wouldn't say we're on the rich end or on the poor end when it comes to PNG.
Well, then from PNG and then Melbourne to the rich part of Sydney out in Blacktown, you've moved over
the
there.
The shores of Blacktown.
The shores of Blacktown. you know, from Patrician Brothers in Blacktown, schooling and, you know, moved over. What was it like, you know, moving from that environment, now moving out to Sydney's West?
It was challenging, man. Like I talk about my initial thing about, you know, in Samoa being a PNG kid, in PNG being that Samoa kid, then you come into, initially we went into Wentworthville, and Wentworthville was a fairly, I think it's a bit more multicultural than it is now. You know, the Lebanese kids, Italian kids, thing, but there weren't that many Polynesians initially when I first went in. So I was sort of trying to find my feet, you know, like friendship and probably sound a lot more Australian now, but when we first came, it was hard to adapt. You know, we speak different, we look different, that sort of thing. And I think the common ground was footy, man. Like, so I had a couple of mates playing at under nines and tens. We didn't have a car or anything, so they were like, "Oh, come down and can you have a game?" Have to beg my mum for a lift to get to the game and that sort of thing. And that, it was one of the cool things that probably bring us together in terms of friendships. So that was my initial introduction, and then in 97 we moved to Blacktown, and it was exactly the same thing. It was like, you know, I got exposed to more cultures, if you like, and different friendships, and the commonality I always had was sport. So initially it was purely, man, just to find your feet as a kid, like, who are you? It's a new environment, different dynamics, different cultures, guys all coming from different places of the world, and rugby league was a common ground for us. And it's tough, bro. Like, I'll go back and sometimes you go back to Blacktown and, you know, wherever, and sometimes you see sort of the kids that are first-generation immigrants when they come over, and it sort of rocks you. You're like, oh, you know, that was us. You know, it could be because you grow up, you start having kids, and that you almost forget a little bit about what it was like, you know, that sort of running around with an afro and, like, half-cut hair or whatever. You're doing your best, the sort of thing.
I'm still doing that.
But, that's it, man. So sort of like... it was good to have sport because it definitely helped us acclimatise.
Yeah, I feel like my sons are going through that same journey, you know, being half Australian and half Cook Island and spending a lot of time in the UK. When we came back from that long stint in the UK, they've really loved their rugby league because, one, it surrounds them from, you know, with all other like-minded kids, but they get to be a part of that environment and also... Yeah, everyone loves competing. Everyone loves trying to, you know, drop the shoulder or earn that kind of respect. So I feel like on the footy field, that's when you earn your respect. So were you always a good rugby league player, or was it when you came to Sydney you started to get an understanding of the game?
Yeah, when you're younger, you actually have no idea, right? Like, so I came over, I was like I like the game. I can, you know, play good on the sideline when I'm watching my old man and stuff. But so my first introduction was actually I was 10 years old. So my brother was playing under 12s for Wentworth Rugby Union, and they had no reserves, I think. So then they said, "Oh, does that fellow on the side play?" So I was like, "Yeah, no worries." So I played outside centre, and I was cactus. Like, I was like, I couldn't catch, couldn't tackle. Like under 12s, like the guys were just running through me. So I had no idea. I was like, "Man, I don't even know if I'm good." Like, whatever. And then so I asked my mum in under 11s, "Oh, my mate's playing for Wentworth Magpies. And he's willing to help us out with lifts and get it, like, can I go in?" And when I played my age group, that's when we played second division, so it wasn't sort of anything crash up, but I went all right. Like, I was like, "Oh, man, this is pretty good." I like playing my own age, and I was like a little bit taller than some of the other kids and sort of running through. And in PWSA, we sort of made Met West, and we won the Met West. I met a heap of guys. Blake Green was in our Met West team, Junior Moores. Nathan Armour. So, like, there was a nice little group of players that we played when we were in 11. And then that's when I realised, when I was 11, 12, like, okay, I'm sort of not too bad from the under-10s shellacking I got when I was in my brother's team. And then under-11s, I switched over to Cambridge Park in under-12s. Yeah, so It just flipped really quickly from 10, 11, 12, and then I thought I was onto a good thing when I was 12.
Oh, mate, I can't believe Union let you go. It just seems like a common theme all the time. We don't know how to keep some talent. But just hearing T talk about his boys coming over and yourself coming over and just even having cousins and family members coming over, and there's that little bit of adjustment period, and you remember some things where what you do back on the islands just didn't float well here in Australia. Do you have any of those memories where you thought, oh yeah, this is play on here in PNG, and when you came over, it's like, oh, I'm definitely not going to do that again?
No, not really. Like, I don't know, man, you find your feet, like, I don't know, back in those, like, you have a couple of scuffles when you're in primary school.
Which was the norm?
Yeah, I don't know how to say this. The big, probably, because I went into public school system, so I was in the public, and, you know, the public school system was great. Like, I had some really influential teachers there and friends that were really good. But probably the polish is when halfway through grade 7 I got accepted into Patrician Brothers. And that was the first time where, like, you know, it was sort of like you have to wear proper shoes, like leather shoes, your shirt. And when I got in there, you had to have, like, books in your homeroom to read and stuff. When the teacher comes in, you sort of stand up, that you can't walk on the grass. So that was probably the first time, I think, that I noticed something different in terms of schooling or social etiquette, if you like.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Oh, mate, I got that shock when I moved from college and high school after year 10 to St. Dominic's College in year 11 and 12. Straight away, I'm like, oh, man, what is this? And I was just there to, honestly, hang around my footy mates, eat some good food, and then play some footy during in that MCS comp. So,
yeah, I'm
grateful for my mum for paying those school bills, because I heard they weren't cheap.
It's funny you say that. Just even going from a Catholic school to, like, seeing GPS schools, like the private ones. Like, when I was had an opportunity to go to Scots, I was like, there's no way I belong in this area. Like, the guy's house is the guy's garage is bigger than my whole house, you know, in some of those areas. But yeah, I was just thought I'd bring it up just to see you know, what was different. Just that shock factor. I was like, wow, okay, it's different. But
oh, I got that shock. Yeah. Don't worry about that.
We will. Yeah.
Hey, I want to just touch on we spoke about both your mum and dad, and, you know, you mentioned about being first generation immigrants and the sacrifices that, you know, our parents or we speak to our guests about the sacrifices our parents or grandparents have made to create that pathway to the life that we're living right now. What are the biggest values or lessons that you've learned from, you know, both your mum and dad through that journey that they made for you to be where you are today?
There's a big appreciation, right? So at a very young age, I realized how much. So my mum walked away from her career. As I said, she was looking after us, brought us over to a safer environment with more opportunities. I really appreciated deeply when I was younger, but as I've got older too, I've sort of realized, man, like, to come across as an immigrant without, you know, your practicing career, and then with the four young children, and for my mum to make that work, and we didn't get a car until a bit later, like, I think when we moved to Blacktown in 97, and then, like, try to take us to training. Like, I don't know why, but, like, the guys I met in Met West, I started playing my junior rugby league in Cambridge Park. Like, it's a good 25 minutes away from Blacktown. And initially my mum will go pack my sister's, like, dinner and that, and have dinner in the car, wait for us training, go back, you know, and do that sort of thing. So I think the sacrifice my mum gave me that thing where, like, that drive where I want to make this worth it. You know, like, I want to make this opportunity. I don't want to squander it. I don't want to waste it. Or, like, whatever potential I've got, you know, with my two hands, two feet, and my heartbeat is, like, man, I'll give this everything I've got. I've always held that in terms of the sacrifice my mum gave for not just myself, but my brother and my sisters as well. In terms of my dad, like, his discipline that he's provided to me in terms of academics, like, a little bit different. Like, in Paddy's and the boys will know that, whilst I was playing footy and stuff, I was always academically driven as well, and it's put me in good stead. Like, I would be in different classes to all the boys, and then we'll have training in Penrith for junior grades, right? And the guys will leave at lunchtime to, I don't know, they thought they were first grade or something. we got to stretch and we got to catch a train or whatever. But they know, like, I've got to hang around for my physics class, my maths class. And at 3:25, I've got to run to Blacktown to get the 3:30 Katoomba train and get straight to Penrith and then run through Hickey's Lane and that sort of thing. Yes. So I think my dad instilled that in me, like that discipline and drive that, you know, keep that academics, but then keep that discipline and consistency, you know, combine like the sacrifice my mum gave me and then combine with the discipline that my dad always sort of drew in terms of academics and discipline. I think combine that for both, I owe them a lot in terms of who I am today.
And you don't have to be humble. Some of the, those classes you were talking about was like maths extension, physics extension, where...
Yeah, he wasn't in the special education class a few of us down there.
Or like those just hanging out in the ECL classes. You're listening to Sam and T Summer Sit Downs, and this week we're joined by Keith Peters. Let's get into your footy now. We spoke about your early, you know, early experience starting rugby league at, you know, Winnie Magpies, even playing a bit of union. But you know, that nursery that you come through at St. Pat's and Western Sydney, the mixture of both Parramatta Eels and Penrith Development players, we're probably seeing the fruits of all of that right now with Penrith winning four in a row. We probably didn't get that right balance back in the day, filtering all that talent into the one team. But you know, yourself leading the way for a lot of Pacific players back then, and you know yourself in the group of players. What was that experience like for you as a junior Penrith development player?
It was really good. And I don't think it was really, really strong back then, right? So I'll probably combine with like the school experience. So with Cambridge Park out west initially. So I think I was very fortunate enough to go to Blacktown Patrician Brothers. I think where it's positioned probably halfway in the border district, like Blacktown and Seven Hills is on the border between the Parramatta Rugby League District and the Penrith. So initially, and we had Matty Cameron actually pulled us into, he was with Parramatta doing the, I think, like the pathways and the summer coaching and stuff with the Parramatta Eels. And he pulled us into Blacktown Patrician Brothers initially. And then I think he provided that great structure from what he was doing in that sort of summer coaching into Paddy's, and then blended both the Parramatta and the Penrith players together. And particularly in the Penrith district, it's really raw, eh? When I got out there, it surprised me how passionate not only the boys and the parents, but the mums, man. Like they're like pretty fierce. Like everyone gets behind under 12s, under 13s level, and it's sort of that's where you sort of find out straight away if you can cut the mustard. And you know, like there's guys out there giving their all at multiple levels and representing, you know, a whole family. So I started in Cambridge Park, as I said. I had some friends there from under 11s. From under 12s, and then from 13s, Mark Oro became our coach, I think, from under 13s, and instilled in, like, you know, was a good influence on my life initially as well. He never really met anyone that's played first grade before. He provided that example, had a good culture for our boys to be comfortable in our footy, create good friendships that we could sort of play around. You know, you combine Patrician Brothers, Blacktown, and Cambridge Park playing out west, like St. Mary's, Mitchenberry, like Doonside, like everyone sort of, it was quite scattered.
Brothers, Comets, Dominic. Comets.
Oh, the Comets.
Come on, mate.
Oh, every club sort of had sort of, you know, a couple of gun players, and, you know, we're all striving to get into those younger development teams with the Penrith jersey on us to go and play against whoever, Dubbo, Group 6, you know, who was sort of happy to, but, yeah, man, it was a great nursery, and there's some really good players. It was that came, left, you know, moved on to bigger and better things. Had different walks of life, but it was really, I'd say it was really raw back then, like really raw. Like a lot of it based on pure talent and hard work. Now there's I think there's a lot more science behind footy these days, and how they break it down and provide a lot of skill set.
You talk about the hostile environments out in Sydney's West and playing in those games. We probably only see now there's probably more ball players up and coming for Pacifica talent. You've been playing that 6-13 role. Was there many ball players aspiring to, you know, be in that position? Like, or did you start in the front row and then end up being a ball player?
The game was a little bit different back then, right? Now, so I think the ball players now are sort of like the nines and the sevens almost, like the sevens gone into a bit of a nine position. Back in those days, the 13 was looked at as a ball player as well. So I'm not sure. I think it was probably the Parramatta influence where they had Jason Smith and Jim Dimmick, a 6 and a 13, and the 7 sort of directing the show in the middle a little bit. So I started in the pack, like 13, like that was probably coming in from rugby union. You can sort of feel the ball a little bit more. But I would probably say you know, you watch Joey Johns throwing cutout balls back in those days, and then you start looking, you know, Filetti Mateo started doing like sort of one-handers and different sort of items. So it's almost like you learn off your peers, man, like how competitive Penrith was. Peter Wallace was a year above us. You have a look at sort of what he does. Even I'd shout out, like, you know, Benny Harden was in my age group.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he was really, really good, and yet got hit with a couple of knee reconstructions. But we used to talk footy all the time. You know, like, how do you break down this play? And that, and the coaches almost gave us the freedom to do that. There wasn't a heap of structure back then. It was more so play what's in front of you, got a quick play of the ball, you know, sing it. It was a unique blend between, you know, watching the, like, I suppose, running locks like a Jim Dimmick, but then what are all the boys doing? What are the guys at Parramatta learning? The, you know, 6 o'clock passes. Hey, boys at Penrith, what are you guys doing? Run hard, hit the gap, you know, like, you know, so.
Bro, it's funny you mentioned that. I remember Camo coming in with his, like, with the, you know, how you catch the ball, making sure you catch it the way you want to pass it to get that delivery way quicker, thumb grip on the ball, like all those little things. And then all the ones from Para, they understood, yeah, this is technically what we're doing. All the ones from Para, like, get out of here, Camo. We're not doing that. Like, just give me the ball. I'm going to run. But it was funny that when you mentioned that were the two blends at school, adopting, you know, the different styles. So
we had Craig Colnane at St. Dominic's College, and at the time he was the Parramatta Eels assistant coach. And the one thing I remember him teaching us, and I actually taught it to my kids or the footy team that I coached the other week, was, you know, that sternum part in between the chest? He said that little area is, God put that there to put a footy ball in there that fits the footy ball perfectly. so you protect the ball, and then you bring your bumpers up to protect the ball. So you put the ball in that little sternum area. It's crazy to think the stuff that you remember taught by
Craig Colnane.
Yeah,
Craig Shout out.
Cully. But then, yeah, you end up going and making your debut in 2006. I know you represented PNG before that, which we'll touch on shortly. But, man, that would have had to be quite an experience. And you mentioned earlier you were a Penrith Panthers fan by chance, and then you get to don the jersey. What was that like for yourself?
Yeah, it was surreal, eh? Like, you sort of, when you're 17, 18, and I was doing quite well in school footy and at a junior level, you think, like, how far away is this dream, you know? Like, can I almost sort of touch it? I had a knee reconstruction when I was 18, and then that sort of, like, sort of puts a couple of questions in your mind. But just the experience itself, so I was playing Premier League sort of reserve grade at the time. John Ling was a coach, so Shane Richard was out there, Mike Cleary, like, it was sort of, Penrith were coming off a 2003 premiership. So in 2006, when I made my debut, a lot of the guys were still around. Presto, Reese, Tony, Craig Gower, Joey Nullivow and stuff. So to be called up into that team that only, you know, a couple of years ago won a premiership, surreal, man. Like, I remember putting my boots on, looking around, and it, like, you think that you're watching a movie, to be honest. Like, the guys are there, and you sort of think, like, what am I doing here? But it was a great experience. It sort of went really quickly, to be honest. Like, you know, John Ling called us up, and he's probably a man of few words. He keeps footy very simple, Leggy. Like, he's a very passionate sort of guy, but he's very straightforward in terms of his approach to footy, which I think probably helped when you're younger. Didn't have to overthink it. Get in there, have your debut, and do your best. So, yeah, great experience. A couple of things go through your mind, like your mum's sacrifice, the drives to Cambridge Park, carpooling, the opportunity to come over and play, be put in systems that, you know, fortunate enough to learn and develop and then sort of convert to a debut, man. Loved it.
You mentioned earlier in the interviews, just saying, you mentioned the Panthers and Greg Alexander while you're in PNG. Yeah, what was that like now that you're actually in a Penrith jersey and thinking of, you know, when you were as a kid, just those moments, and here you are representing the mighty Panthers?
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, you know, you think when you're doing a chip and chase in Port Moresby, you've got no idea where Penrith actually is, you know, like, you're just saying, like, you know, Panther this, Panther that. As I got older, I sort of started to have a look at, you know, Brad Fittler and stuff and what he was doing, like left foot step, and you try to emulate that a little bit when you're younger. And I sort of hold on to as well, like, Freddie also, like, come through Cambridge Park with, you know, a few guys, so you sort of, like, you know, stepping stone, I'm trying to follow in these guys' footsteps, so... to actually put that jersey on and be surrounded by guys, I'll probably, just for a Polynesian sense, right, like if I can sort of diverge a little bit. When I was younger, actually, we weren't even sure how many Polys could actually make it. So we used to kill Harry Matthews, smash it. SG ball. But there was a bit of a stigma before that Polynesian sort of like a little bit lazy, you know, like sort of like man child. They can sort of run under 12s, run through this. When I was at school, you saw Tony Pulitoa come through, John Paul II, killing it, Aussie home loans, and then sort of debut at, I don't know, 18, 19. That was the first switch, I think, for all of us, like definitely for myself, where you sort of see like a role model and you're like, oh, hey, bro, this is actually possible, you know, like you know, he's paving the way and he's almost like a pioneer for all of us. And that sort of, there was a couple of, like, you know, Polynesians playing first grade, but not to that sort of level out at Penrith where, you know, from Mount Druitt to St Mary's to think, and you're like, it's there. So I think to have him do that, they won their premiership, to come through and then play alongside the likes of Tony and Frank, who sort of, I believe, sort of paved the way for a lot of the boys out west in Mount Druitt, Blacktown, Penrith, and made it possible. Like right now, it's evident. You can sort of see all the boys, all Polly's in every team. But back when I was younger, it wasn't the case.
Man, you're not wrong. They were a massive influence, even for us, because I think we're a few years younger than you, and just seeing the Hair Bear bunch as well, and growing their hair, and just seeing that iconic figure of our big Pacifica players coming through and dominating like that. It was like, okay, it is possible, and they have planted the seed.
I always say that, you know, those two.
Yeah,
Frank Pulitoa, Tony Pulitoa, and Joe Nullivell, those three leading the way for a lot of our young Pacifica athletes out Western Sydney, but not only on the field. So Tony Pulitoa, he holds, so there's this rowing test you mentioned about, we're known for just being man-childs, but not really the fitness department. Well, he still holds the record for, there's this test on the rower. You have to do 1 minute, try and get over 300 metres, you get 30 seconds off, and you go again until failure, until you don't reach that 300 metres. Now, I remember there's a story that they said when Tony jumped on the rower, that they had to tell him, you know, to stop doing the test, like, you're pretty much aced it, because there was no way he was going to get off that rowing machine by getting underneath 300 metres. And I think he was up to, like, over 20 reps. Then, so he led the way in the gym, which kind of drove a lot of our young Islander boys to push themselves. And yeah, you're right. You know, them being on the footy paddock made us believe that, you know, we could one day be on the NRL scene as well.
Is that what you noticed straight away, just on what T was saying, when you first joined the NRL, that work ethic, this is hard, and the reason why our talent falls off, because of the fact that to be able to go that next step, It's a lot more than talent. There's a lot of work that's involved on the field and off the field.
Yeah, well, I think because talent only gets you so far, right? So you think, like, I think when it gets introduced at a younger age and you learn the sort of fundamentals and skill sets, because a lot of the boys, particularly as man-childs, you can do what you want, but they probably don't invest enough time at it from a skill set point of view. And I think a lot of guys are getting introduced to that now. As you get up, there's multiple things, man, like nutrition, like professional lifestyle. Like if you grow up where we grow up, you look around, there aren't a heap of examples of, hey, guys, you shouldn't be eating that. You should be sleeping at this time. You should be doing that. So I think there's multiple factors initially where it was probably more knowledge and how to become a professional. And, you know, culturally, you listen to your elders and you pay respect to your elders. So whatever they tell you, you listen to. but at a younger age, the elders aren't playing, you know, professional sport. So they're making do what they can. They're working in factories, they're doing this, so they're, like, you know, doing the best they can with the skill set they've got. I think once Tony sort of paved the way and you realize, okay, man, like, there's a bit here, like, you get, there's nutrition, there's, you know, thing, then you become on a level playing field where it gives a lot of the Polynesians and Melanesians who have that skill set to go, okay, because, like, you guys know, right, like, there's heap of talented guys that never played professional footy, right, but a lot of guys that play eventually are the guys that stick with it, you know, reinvest in the fundamentals, apply, you know, a bit of a professional lifestyle, and consistently over a long period of time, we'll get there. Yeah, I think that's only coming into fruition now for a lot of the people.
You're definitely right. I know we're running tight for time, but I want to touch on your Papua New Guinea experience, and, you know, representing your family, your mum's side. One, what was that experience like for you when you first got to, don the PNG Kumuls jersey?
So it's pretty special. Like, I know some of Canada's test matches, but, like, for my debut, I would say is in 2004. I played for a Prime Minister's 13 against Red Hot Matty Bowen up in Townsville. I went up there initially. So when I was probably trying to play first grade, to be honest, like trying to get through that. And then Bob Bennett, Wayne Bennett's brother, was calling us in. He wanted us to play when I was 17. I pushed it back and played at 18.
So it is Wayne Bennett's brother, Bob Bennett, the one that coached.
Yeah, Bob, he was. I told you, T.
It was one of my questions. Bob Bennett, and he didn't believe me. See?
No, so Bob went up as a mouth. Bob went up as a police officer in Leigh back in the 80s and then never left PNG. He stayed there for quite some time and ended up coaching the Kumuls. That's why Wayne's affiliation, also Craig Bellamy, like there's a few guys who've had a bit to do with the Kumuls over the years. But yeah, that mainly is through Bob and his relationship with Wayne.
Bob Bennett, there you go. Sorry, continue on that journey on your debut.
Yeah, bro. So my debut was in Townsville with Paulie Aiton, and then we went up. He was come to Panthers, and we went up together. And it was the first time I was like, oh, bro, like, you know, in Blacktown and thing, I've had a lot of, you know, Cook Islands mates, Samoan mates, Fijians. But to be back with the brothers and PNG, like, oh, like we're the same. We were born up there. We're trying to make, you know, life in Australia. And then the year after, I went up to PNG and played in the Promises 13s. There with Stanley Hedina, and I think he's the CEO now of PNG Rugby League. Like, it was like a homecoming a little bit. I was like, man, this is where I'm from. Like, I was born here. Like, I can see the thing. And the people that get behind you, like, it's a real moment, man. Like, when I left, like, I was only young, like at 19, and I knew the responsibility going into the game and stuff, but when I left, like, I was quite emotional, man. I was like, it meant a lot to me to go back and represent my country of birth and see how much the people cared about it as well. From Taka people, like the kids with one shorts, like the old Lloyd Robson, you know, there's families underneath that used to live underneath the grandstand, come out and talk footy with you. You know, they could name every lineup for Canberra Raiders and ask the kid, why aren't you at school, man? He's like, bro, we got no money. Like, I can't go to school. But, you know, like, that, so to see how much it cares and how much sport can help a people as well, like, it meant a lot to me, particularly when you see a lot of people. And I've seen it firsthand with my dad being a doctor, when people are sick and kids are sick and, you know, think that, like, there's a lot of people that don't have much, but we'll hold on to footy as a hope, as joy, as, you know, whatever they can in their lives.
When you did play that game, and then I'm assuming you would have called mum to let her know about the experience, what was that like, you know, talking to her about wearing that jersey and representing her side of the family?
Yeah, it was unreal. Like, I know it meant a lot to her. She never pushed me, you know, like, go and represent Papua New Guinea. Like, that was definitely my choice. But when I told her, she just said she was, like, you know, so proud that I'm representing her country and her, like, her family and stuff. So, like, she was super proud. Like, my mum doesn't, like, say too much in terms of, like, sentimental sort of things, but she definitely told me it meant a lot to her. And, you know, she loved us going over there, like she loves all my siblings. But it was a good moment between, I suppose, my mum and myself to have that.
I've always hated playing the PNG Kumuls because it's like you're all made of rock. You're all made of granite. I remember losing a Pacific Champs final in Port Moresby, and since then I'm like, man, I don't like playing these guys at all. But over the years, I've got to see the growth of Papua New Guinea Rugby League and how much talent is coming through the NRL now and how much growth there is. So we're already talking about PNG being the next NRL team. What's your thoughts on from the time that you represent the PNG Kumuls to where they are now and the future of PNG Rugby League?
Yes, I think the future is really bright. So I had a great opportunity before PNG played the Kiwis. Johnny Wilshire and the team invited us to come and do a jersey presentation. So I went in, you know, it was a big honour for me. But one of the things I said, and I'm happy to say publicly, is I said to the guys, if I was playing now, I wouldn't make this team, right? Like, you know, what Lockie and the guys are doing, Kyle, you know, Reece Martin and stuff, like they're taking the team, I believe, in the right direction and to another level. Like, we had a really good team, don't get me wrong, before, but the opportunities that the guys are getting professionally in Australia, in the UK, you know, and bringing it back home to the Kumuls. Now, what that does for PNG and you know, the potential that the NRL has, probably always used to wonder why didn't the PNG guys sort of crack on a little bit. But if you dig a little bit deeper, we're talking about the Tony Pulitzer tours and the, you know, what you learn at a professional level as Haramats, Eshi Ball, Jersey Flegg. A lot of the Polynesians, there's a bit of a pathway there for visas and applications via New Zealand. Like, it's a, you know, there's a lot higher acceptance. And then eventually into Australia. And naturally, that sort of filters back to, you know, their nations. PNG's never really had that. Like, it was very limited. It's very hard to get visas over to Australia and get going, particularly if you're showing any promise in sport. Like, you have to get a full-time professional contract to come over. Otherwise, you're getting a three-month, almost like a holiday visa, right, to come play Reggies or Flegg. To set up an academy to provide those skill set, hold the ball onto your sternum, 6 o'clock, and all these fundamentals, you're not sure at the under 16, 17 level who's going to make it, who's going to be a superstar, whichever. So to spread that far and wide in a country like Papua New Guinea, where, you know, there's some talent in the mountains that you've never even heard of before that is surviving on, you know, 1.5 meals a day. You know, there's some talent on the coast, super speed, that is running on, like, some of the fields out there, bro, is like concrete. Right. So to provide a skill set, to provide knowledge of what a professional system looks like, I think the potential is really, really high, and it's untapped potential. Almost like, you don't want to go full comparisons, but you see the way the South Americans play football, you know, like, they're diehard. These Brazilians, Argentinian kids, they, like, it's the same thing. You go to Papua New Guinea, it's not, oh, am I going to play AFL? Am I going to play rugby union? These guys are running on concrete saying that they want to play for Kumuls or, you know, Panthers. So yeah. If you nurture that a little bit and you provide that sort of opportunity, and that Tony Pulitzer example of saying, if you can visually see yourself as a Tony Pulitzer, if someone can visually see themselves as a Dave Mead, as a Lachlan Lamb, as a Reece Martin, man, that's when it becomes possible. And then you see these guys taking these extra leaps. So it's a challenge. I think the NRL, there's no doubt. They've got a major challenge in front of them, but there's potential there that's almost like a, you know, a big wave that's ready to be sort of unleashed if given the opportunity.
Yeah, big challenge, but how exciting, as you said, like, there's some of those names and some of, oh, wow, when you said some talent in the mountains, I was just picturing this beast guy coming out looking like granite, never touched the weight, but he's got a massive chest and just looking like an Adonis. But I just want to ask, the jersey presentation that you did last year for Pac Champs, how did that make you feel as an old boy going back there and presenting the jerseys to the team before they played against New Zealand?
Yeah, it was a great privilege and honour, man. Like, I got the call up and the boys come into the country. They arrived in Sydney, I think, on Monday or Tuesday. Johnny Wilshere picked up the call and said, you know, you're in Sydney, you want to come in? And I was taken aback a little bit. Like, it's been a while. Like, I've been involved in footy since 2010. So it's been, you know, 14, 15 years. My initial mindset was, hey, Johnny, these kids won't even know me, man. Like, you know, sort of back then, whichever. But, you know, Paulie Aiton was there, Johnny Wilshere, Tommy Butterfield, and Jason Dimitri stepping their coach and doing a fantastic job. That I went in there and the boys welcomed us with open arms. A lot of them sort of I've had a little bit to deal with in the past, but they all come in very welcoming, and it was a great flourish of memories come back. Of when we're playing, when we're kids, and sometimes, you know, you're really enjoying the times and you know, moving on to the next game. But there were fantastic times that I played with a lot of good players. Stanley Genner, Adrian Lamb, Lockie's dad was our coach, and, you know, these memories come back. So it was a great honour to be pulled into. It's definitely not lost on me what the guys have achieved. And, you know, they've been in Fiji on back-to-back occasions. Like, they're holding their own against some of the heavyweights of rugby league. So it was a privilege to get in there and look some guys in the eye and explain to them how much the jersey means to me and how much it means to the people from my experience, and wish them all the best. So, it was a great honour, Wixie.
There is a special feeling within that PNG camp. I've had the honour to pop in a couple of times. It's cool to hear that they're doing something special, and the future of PNG Rugby League is definitely on its way up. I'm going to wrap us up with one last fun question. I'm just going to go right out of the box. If you got to have one superpower, what would it be and why? Yeah, I'm just going full random out of the box.
Yes.
I thought it was transition, but no, you're right. This is a good one. We've had some funny answers before.
I don't think I've asked anyone this one, but.
Oh, I thought we have.
Have we?
Right.
I don't even have it on my notes. I just made it up.
Oh, For me, I believe, I think the biggest thing that you could wish for, and is like King Solomon, like probably wisdom and understanding, man. I think if we can have a bit more wisdom and understanding, I think as a husband, as a father, as a professional, yeah, man, I'll take a bit more of that.
Was it King Solomon that had the many wives as well?
I thought
that was the angle you got.
Have more wives.
Katrina, I apologize.
In Proverbs, he actually gives a lot of advice about wives, but I found it funny that he's, I think he had 13 of them.
Well, there you go. a wise man. But I heard something before we wrap. Actually, I heard a saying on wisdom and knowledge. Knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad. So there you go. Just to finish on that, you like that? Hey, write that one down,
the Tongan proverb.
King Solomon, that's what they call me. But hey, Keith, honestly, privileged to be able to sit down with you and just chew the fat and just get a little bit more of an understanding of your journey, because I was saying to T off air, all the boys used to look up to you at school, because when you mentioned some of like Junior Moores and even like Zebby Taya and those type of boys, we always thought they were a bit too cool for us at school. You know, felt they were a little bit like a bully, but you would be always the one that came and shook our hands, made us feel welcome at school. And we just always knew that, like, oh, wow, Keith, he was the superstar of that age group, but yet he said hello to us at school. And I'll never forget that, bro, who you are as a person. And it's great to connect on this platform and hear your story. So much love, and we wish you all the best for what you have next.
Appreciate you, brother.
I really appreciate it. Thank you, Sam. Thanks, T, for having us. Lots of fun, man.